Teresa Heveny is with me from the Climate Land Leaders by phone. This is her first time being with KTWH. So, Teresa, thank you so much for being here. We are so grateful that you're giving us the time.
Oh, thanks for having me on this wonderful day.
Yes, it is a wonderful day. Good time to talk about all things outside with spring finally springing. And yeah, I know you have been involved for many, many years in and all over the country in various things related to our planet, most recently with the Climate Land Leaders, which is a organization that I've been learning about and have taken some interest in recently. And could you just begin by telling us a little bit about the history of the Climate Land Leaders? Why does it exist? And
sure.
How did you get involved in it?
Well, we just celebrated our third birthday. We grew Climate Land Leaders out of a need to work with people who own farmland who are not necessarily the people who are operating and farming that ground, to be stewards and to hold in trust, if you will, the goal of using that resource to reduce carbon emissions and to be the best possible stewards in looking at ways to sequester carbon and to use farming practices that meet those goals. A lot of the members of Climate Land Leaders are people who have co-ownership with family members or who received the land from a parent, but who don't necessarily live and work on that land. And many of the Climate Land Leaders have been learning much more about farming practices because of their commitment to reduce carbon pollution and their knowledge of the contribution that agriculture makes to carbon pollution, but also the opportunities that agriculture holds to address our climate challenges.
Right. I absolutely, I love that you, I feel like you honed in on a corner perspective that is less, people generally are less aware of. Like, I think, you know, there's lots of talk about regenerative agriculture and how great it is. It's such a win-win, which it is. But who will be doing it and who needs to be aware of it? Who makes decisions? Like, that seems to be the kind of sort of practical thing that Climate Land Leaders is really looking at. I know that I was just talking to a girlfriend a year or more ago, and she had, it was exactly that situation where she had actually inherited some land and wasn't that involved, but really wanted that land to be farmed in a good way, but had very little contact with the people who were managing it. And so it was so fun to have a place to hook her up.
You've described really a lot of land ownership in the United States and in Minnesota is by people who are not necessarily farming the land. And it's really critical for people to understand farming practices, even if, and to learn about them and to learn about strategies such as soil health and regenerative agriculture and what's involved for the person that's doing the work. Some of those practices, especially initially, might take an upfront investment that a conventional farmer may not want or be able to invest in. So knowing what the programs are that facilitate regenerative agriculture is important. And Climate Land Leaders teaches people both how to have conversations with the folks that are farming their land, and that could be another family member. It could be a niece or a nephew. It could be a longtime neighbor who's not necessarily a relative but has been farming the land for many years. So Climate Land Leaders teaches the practicality, the practical tools of how to have conversations with the people farming the land.
Yeah.
And what kind of goals you should set for your land so that the people that are doing the work on the ground can achieve those goals. I also want to note that stewardship and care for the land doesn't rest with land ownership or shouldn't. We subscribe to the notion that landowners have a responsibility to be stewards so that they are turning the property, the land, over to the next generation in better shape than they have it now. And there are many land ownership patterns, including cooperative land ownership. Historically, Native cultures didn't have the concept of private land ownership. And people look at some of those farming practices and are now relearning and mimicking some of those farming practices as part of a regenerative system of agriculture. So private land ownership isn't a sole determinant of how the farming is being done. But if you have responsibility for that property, you should be looking at stewardship goals and how the person doing the work on the ground is implementing those goals.
Yeah,
that's one thing that Climate Land Leaders does that I think is very unique. Each of their members sets goals for their farm. Maybe it's, I want to really invest in planting trees and building more of a silvopasture operation, since trees and perennials are great tools to capture carbon and to sequester carbon, and have shown long-term to be one of the most effective strategies, if you will, in the face of climate change. So they set goals and report periodically and work with each other, as well as other organizations that do boots on the ground training, such as field days and so forth. And a couple of the groups in your area are the Sustainable Farming Association. Their Lake Superior chapter is it goes up into your area in Cook County, and the Land Stewardship Project, which also has a policy component. And those kinds of groups do field days, workshops, mentoring programs, and Climate Land Leaders attempts to make use of those kinds of programs, and then has its own cadre and cohorts that are focusing on various aspects of regenerative agriculture.
What I love about what you're saying is that it's like you are also paying attention to the relationship piece, and how to get people into these trainings, how to get the land in it being treated in a different way. And I also love it because it seems to me to be kind of a bridge organization, because you are working with farmers who are often of a certain culture, and then you're also with landed owners who are of a different culture, and you're bringing in all the maybe more original land stewards, indigenous people, and presumably also people of color that traditionally have very little access to land. How are these conversations going? Can you encapsulate them in any way? I'm sure there's just the myriads of hopefully great successes and maybe some challenges.
Well, I'll just share some observations from a recent Zoom meeting I was on, and I believe it was called Mistakes Were Made. And it was a cohort of farmers who have experiences ranging from, I am brand new at this, I have been on this ground for a year, to farmers who basically grew up on the land and farmed it, with many farmers who are just in the last maybe 5 years really learning more about regenerative practices. And what I saw is that there was a high degree of curiosity about what worked and what didn't.
Yeah.
And there was a level of trust in this group to be able to share, you know, I tried that and I had hoped that a certain outcome would occur, but it didn't. And the reason it didn't is because I didn't do a particular thing. And so I would say what makes the conversations work is a level of trust that people are in this to really achieve more than just a high return per acre. They're in this to be good stewards and to leave our earth in better shape for the next generation. I should also add that there's kind of a everybody's very anxious to share new information about new programs, and they're very savvy. A number are savvy as to the role that local soil water conservation programs play, and each county in Minnesota has a soil water conservation service that provides resources and that can link people to particular programs and sometimes equipment to really do a better job and to delve into more regenerative practices. So I would say it's a level of trust, and it to be a climate land leader, you have to have, I want to say, a sense of adventure and risk, but you also have to be willing to be to set a goal and be honest about what works and what doesn't. And most business people do that.
Yeah. And I would think that as we all collectively move forward with regenerative agriculture, there's just a million, I mean, it's almost endless, the sort of ways to approach it, and things that will work and things that don't work. And just to have that, sounds like you're having the conversations where there's enough trust that people can really, you know, come together and talk about what's working, what's not working, and move forward as a group. Not everyone has to reinvent the wheel. I think it's a brilliant setup that you have there. And I know you've worked all over the country, or I should say, maybe the Midwest and the West.
Just in the Dakotas and Montana and Minnesota. And my work in the Dakotas was more with family farmers who were either in the midst of the farm crisis or in North Dakota, farming in areas that were being coal strip mined or that were facing oil and gas development. So our role was to work to give them a voice in those decisions so that groundwater wasn't destroyed in the face of seismographing or, say, directional drilling, or so that reclamation of coal mined land was done in a way that restored the land to equal or better productivity, which I don't know if that has ever been achieved, but that was a goal too. And also to look at alternatives to fossil fuel. A number of people were involved in the early days of me renewable energy, looking at ways to produce energy through the sun or the wind.
Yes.
And in Montana, I also worked with a group, Montana Conservation Voters, and there that group was kind of at the crossroads of environment and renewable energy and politics and legislation. We worked to elect policymakers who supported conservation and regenerative agriculture goals. And we also worked on policy to get those measures enacted in the legislature or in Congress.
Yes. And how do you find Minnesota? Every state's different. And obviously, sort of government incentives and programs are always a part of the farmer's life. And the Farm Bill has always been a huge part of a farmer's life, dictating in many ways, you know, how they're going to function. Is that markedly different in Minnesota as in other states, or like, is this a good place to farm?
Well, two things that have struck me since I've moved back to Minnesota, which is my home. I was raised on a farm in southwest Minnesota near Morton, Minnesota, until I was a teenager. And I would say a couple of things stand out. The climate, of course, is different in the Dakotas and Montana, and particularly in Montana and the western Dakotas. There is more public land. There's more federal land. So farmers and ranchers approach agriculture a little bit differently, in that there are different tenants and there are different landowners. And while there is actually a lot of federal land, particularly in northern Minnesota, I would say there's more in proportionate to the total acreage of the states in the Dakotas and Montana. And there's a lot more I'll just say regenerative agriculture using grazing practices there.
Right.
Simply because they have more pasture and grasslands. In terms of the most marked differences that I see, it's in state policy approaches. Agriculture is certainly impacted by the federal farm bill, and the federal farm bill doesn't necessarily embrace the goals of regenerative agriculture. It's very much geared towards the bigger and larger farmers, but approaches at the state level can really work to put more farmers on the land. And in Minnesota, our legislature actually this week just passed the Omnibus Agriculture Bill. And it really is a kind of landmark bill in that it has made remarkable investments for emerging and beginning farmers. The Emerging Farmers Office has been expanded. There's a down payment assistance program that has been increased and funded. There is a beginning farmer technical assistance grants for emerging farmers. Our legislation addresses local and regional food systems with farm to school funding. I'm just kind of rattling off some of the highlights.
Yeah.
There are programs that will ensure a farm to school or a farm to institution coordinator so that local schools can best tap into the farm to school financial support. And then there are measures dealing with soil health and climate change. There will be a new climate coordinator position in the Department of Agriculture. I don't believe this is going to happen until 2025. There's a soil health financial assistance program. It was a pilot before. Now it is funded for 24 and 25 and for out years as well. There are programs for continuous living cover supply chains and ways to market those products so that farmers are paid a fair price as they are endeavoring to change their farming operation and plant more unique or I'll just say new crops that are new to Minnesota, such as Kernza, the Forever Green Initiative, which is a program with the University of Minnesota to do research on various crops that promote sustainability and to promote the marketing of sustainability. The marketing of these sustainable products has been funded. So there's a lot of support for pollinators, which are extremely important to the future of agriculture. So the main difference between the states that I see is the heavy focus on opportunities for beginning farmers, protections for soil health, and addressing the role that local food production and local food systems play in our whole agricultural infrastructure. It's not just about producing corn, soybeans, and dairy. It is about recognizing the diversity of agriculture and creating opportunities for beginning farmers so that we can see more people on the land. The average age of our farmer is still very high. I believe it is now 58. And we want to make sure that the next generation of farmers have opportunities. And the price of land is prohibitive. So these kinds of programs are intended to open the door to people who don't necessarily have access to easy capital and to put a priority on people of color and new farmers who aren't traditionally seen on family farms, but who are very much part of producing local foods in Minnesota. And that's an expanding part of the agricultural economy.
Yeah, that's it all sounds really exciting. Go ahead.
These were bipartisan. By that I mean these weren't just passed on party line votes.
Yep.
These were passed by Republicans and Democrats. And these aren't new ideas, and some simply build and expand on existing programs.
That's
another
wonderful
area. Another area of our work is livestock and raising livestock in sustainable grazing patterns so that we're making the best use of grassland and forage and then having processing opportunities for local people so that they're not reliant exclusively on major food and meat processing plants, but so that we can see the continuation and expansion of local meat processors as businesses on our main streets.
Yes.
Which... And that's a program that came out of the Department of Agriculture a couple of years ago, and that's been expanded, more training programs at community colleges, more financial support for local processors to expand and upgrade their businesses and to get a workforce in place that can turn into future owners of those facilities.
Yeah, it's wonderful to hear you talk about all these things, because those are gaps that have been recorded in interviews previous to this one. It sounds like a lot of different things are being addressed, and it's really exciting to hear that it's coming not only through the legislature, but through organizations like your own, where you're just really helping people do things differently with or without the support of the government. And it sounds like you're really on your way to all of the above. So thank you so much, Teresa. We're out of time. Do you have any final comments?
No, I just really appreciate the opportunity to speak today, and encourage you to have future speakers from the area, from Sustainable Farming Association. There are a number of farmers who can give some really good examples of their own operations up there. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Teresa, and we'll have you again sometime.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Will do.
That was Teresa Heavenly from the Climate Land Leaders.